Blog Talk Radio. Everyone, thanks for joining us today on Chai Chat. My name is Mary Rockenstein, and my company is Leadership Edge Solutions. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Victoria Vitier from Enlightened Life Coaching. Victoria, say hello.
Hi, everybody. Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good morning, Mary. How you doing?
Good. It's a beautiful May day here in Columbus. A little bit rainy, but hey, we need that. So,
That's right. At any rate,
If you are a new listener or if you've listened to any of our shows live or in the archives, you know that we really take our mission seriously on Chai Chat. We are attempting to transform your world at work. Whatever your engagement level is, we want to help raise it. Right, Victoria?
Yes, indeed. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So, you know, we've spent the last couple of months actually talking about a couple of specific topics that are very relevant in the workplace and very important as it relates to building relationships and building what Victoria and I have couched as bridges instead of crevices and canyons and so forth. And, you know, we spent some time talking about cohort groups and generations in the workplace, and then we also had some fun with ego states. And while both of those we both believe are vehemently important in terms of the relationship building and understanding how to increase engagement in the workplace, there's a topic that, you know, we're going to be focusing on for sure during this month and maybe even extending it into the next month or two, because it's such a broad, expansive topic. And it gets into gender in the workplace. And, you know, if you take a look at the slides that Victoria has put up, you know, the kind of in parentheses, yes, the deck is still stacked. And it really is. And, Victoria, I know you have some wonderful information that you're going to leap into in a minute, but I have to tell you a funny little story. You know, we have a wonderful zoo in Columbus, and there is an exhibit there of bonobos. And bonobos are, if I'm remembering this correctly, I believe that they are most like human beings, more so than chimpanzees. But they're a primate. And what's really interesting about the bonobos is that the female bonobos at a very young age will leave the group that they were born into, and they will go out and seek other groups, and they will allow themselves to be kind of mentored, and they will follow in the footsteps of some of the alpha females in the other bonobo groups or tribes. And I think that's pretty cool. It's like these young bonobo females are actually humbling themselves to go out and learn from other women. What do you think about that, Victoria? It's a little different from our world, isn't it?
I think we can learn a lot from these lovely primates, actually. And for anyone who, for anyone who is really interested in this, just Google bonobo and look at their social structure and look at how they function as a primate group. It's very, very different. And then a little bit here, I'm going to talk about an aspect of the big picture called the Great Reversal. And it will have something to do with this bonobo example that Mary has just gifted us with. So thank you, Mary. That's great. You learn so much
at the zoo.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Victoria, why don't you get us started? This is really an area in which you have so much expertise.
Thank you, Mary. Yeah, this I've spent most of my academic and professional career largely focused on issues of gender and gendered energy, and so this is really an area I feel very strongly about. I've dedicated, you know, most of my life's work to this, and there's so much here in terms of what it means to be human. What it means to live lovingly on this planet. So I'll just couch everything in that broad umbrella. That's why this is interesting to me, and that's why it's so important. This is Mother's Day month, by the way. Belated Mother's Day to all you nurturers out there, in whatever form your mothering takes. And next month, of course, is Father's Day month. And so that's why we want to really focus on gender in these 2 months specifically. basically, out of the year because, you know, it's sort of brought to the forefront of our Hallmark consciousness, right, these dates. But
that's right.
I want to point out that there is an awesome TED Talk out there called Building a Caring Economy. I'm just going to start there by saying that this TED Talk is done by Rian Eisler. Rian Eisler wrote an awesome work called The Chalice and the Blade that was published in 1987. And that book lays the groundwork for understanding basically the development of civilization. And it goes back beyond what we call history and includes a large body of knowledge that most people are completely unaware of. There's a lot we didn't learn in history class, but we certainly didn't learn herstory. We didn't learn what happened in prehistory. So I'm going to get to that in a minute, but that is Rian Eisler's Bailiwick, and she has this awesome TED Talk out there called Building a Caring Community. It's all about GDP, and she talks about the fact that we do not measure GDP in ways that are really humanizing. We measure GDP in a way that has to do with the building of wealth, and it includes a lot of negative, violent, horrible chapters in human history. And those chapters actually increase GDP for a country, sadly enough. And she says that we need to begin really looking at the basis from which we understand the growth of economics, and measures for economics need to change. Our current measures don't include well-being. They don't include care for the environment. They don't even include long-term economic success. They're just looking at a snapshot picture that is now and is about amassing wealth. So it's very important. Yeah. I mean, and I start the show out by this broad brushstroke of if we really thought about what the heck everybody's rushing around, you know, doing what, going where, amassing what, for what. If we look at the big picture, what are we doing? What's it based on? Is it humanizing? Does it even deserve the title of civilization? Is it civil?
Yeah,
these things are really, really important. Yes, they're very, very important questions. And this is what will humanize us. This is what will help us to stay on this planet in a sustainable, loving way. And it is the only way that we can move forward. We're literally at a crossroads of human development. We're at a crossroads of civilization. We're at a portal. And we have the means to destroy ourselves. We have the means to consume ourselves right off the back of Mother Earth. And it's very, very important what we're talking about here in terms of these gender issues and the balance that is required immediately, if not sooner, for us to develop in order for us to live a civilized, loving, peaceful, cooperative, creative human life. Together as male and female. What do you think, Mary? That's just my intro.
I agree. And, you know, I just want to state, because obviously you have two women, right, on this radio show. And, Victoria, I appreciate what you said. It really is a balance. And when we bring this next time more so into the workplace, I'm going to echo the same thing. We're not anti-men. We're not, you know, anti-women. It's a balance that's very much needed. And I think the point that you're going to soon make is that we've been in an imbalance for quite some time, right?
Indeed. Yeah, and I come back to Rian Eisler, who did this awesome talk. So please, people, take a look at this, because this really, really makes you think. She wrote The Chalice and the Blade. In that book, I'm going to do the 30-second version of The Development of Civilization very quickly here, but way back before we learned of this in school, we had a social order that was very different than the current social order that we know, or the social order that we've known of for the past 6,000 years, kind of. It was a prehistorical kind of social order where there was matrifocal, not patriarchal and not matriarchal. There was no power over. In fact, in these what we call matrifocal or gynocentric societies, and you can read about this in The Chalice and the Blade. This is real stuff. They have done archaeological digs of these societies and these civilizations, and the last one is in Crete, by the way, that was wiped out. And I'll tell you in a minute when and where. By warring factions, and the fact is that in all these civilizations, there was no weapon, so they could not defend themselves. So there was a time when there was not even a weapon to be found among civilized human beings at that time. And these cultures were, there was something called the Great Reversal that occurred at about 4,000 BCE, where there were Indo-European tribes that came from Northeast Asia and kind of warring tribes with horses as their machinery came down and basically took over cultures that were agrarian and had no weapons and were matrifocal and largely yin or feminine energy. In their essence, and lived in a beautiful balance between the male and female elements. And these areas were overtaken during the Kurganization and the Great Reversal. So if you want to take a look at what really kind of happened, this reversal, it looks like the bonobos, we were kind of doing it the bonobo way back before we started doing it, way of the warrior kind of, And I'm going to now move to, the concept of energies. Because we're male-female biologically means nothing. We also have energies. I'm sure you know some men that are more nurturing than some women in their behaviors and attitudes, and some, and the reverse. And so this is really about the balance of energies within each one of us, whether we are biological female or biological male. And so it's very, very important for us to develop this blending. The fact is we'll be talking about how there is the valuing of yang over yin in the world for the past many, many hundreds of years, thousands of years, and how that has developed itself into corporate and work life. We'll bring it right up to the present here in a minute. But I want to also talk about psychological studies and developmental research here for just a second. There is a body of research that was done in the 70s and 80s, and Mary is going to refer to some of this in the current picture in a minute with the Sheryl Sandberg book. But we are looking at a body of theory that basically says that women denigrate themselves and are apologetic and don't expect to succeed, and when they do succeed, they attribute their success to external factors, not internal. There's a whole body of research called attribution theory, whole body of research called expectancy theory. Look it up sometime, you'll see that I kid you not. And the world is still functioning this way. Sadly, the writing on the wall that we saw in the research studies back in the 70s and 80s, we did not course correct on this or adjust or evolve. What we did was simply keep writing it on the wall. So this is, kind of less than 5 minute. There's also a body of developmental theory that's really important, and much of it was done by the Stone Center, again, back in the 80s. Where we see that when little girls, there's tomboys and, little boys and little girls are running around, there are gendered patterns there, too, that are deeply entrenched from the very beginning and the way that children are socialized by their mom and their dad. There's so much of this that is based on parental gender enculturation. But we're looking here at developmental longitudinal studies that show that girls excel, they climb trees, they beat boys, they do whatever, and boys beat girls and it's kind of equal, up until pre-puberty, at which point boys' development goes in the direction of what is valued. Girls' development, of course, develops biologically, physiologically, hormonally, culturally, in a direction of what is not valued. So we get to a point where little girls hit the wall as they are pre-adolescent and adolescent. Boys jettison forward in their self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just leave it there. This is a whole body of developmental research. I make this stuff up, not. It's real. go ahead and look out there if any of you are interested. I've just kind of covered in 5 minutes the entire body of, you know, history of civilization, gender and energy, psychological and developmental research. But this stuff is real. We could talk about it. I could talk about it at least for years to you guys. But it's real important in understanding the current picture, which I'm going to throw it to Mary now. We're going to talk a little bit more about recent books that are out there and what we're looking at in terms of, you know, much of the corporate world and what we're seeing here now. But understand that there is a really powerful foundation of knowledge that is very, very important to understand and look at when we're looking at what is wrong with this picture and what do we need to do to make it right. Okay,
yeah,
Mary, you're on.
Yeah, Victoria, thank you. That was excellent. I mean, I found myself taking notes as well when you were talking. It's like,
it's
that was
rich
very cool.
Stuff.
It is very rich. And you should probably be nominated to be in the Guinness Book of World Records, by the way, for covering the history of civilization and then some in that short period of time. But seriously, to get back to, you know, I love that little analogy that you gave at the end about the little boy and the little girl. And, you know, developmentally, they reach a point where, you know, the little girl, what she's doing developmentally is not valued, but the guys, you know, jettison. There is a Harvard case study that I think really reflects this. There was a woman by the name of Heidi Roizen. I probably butcher that name, so I apologize, Heidi, if you are listening. But she apparently successfully started her own business. And here's what Harvard did. They had two groups of students. And in the one group, they presented Heidi Rosen's case study in terms of how she did what she did and became successful, just as was. In the other group, the only thing that they changed was Heidi's name. They changed Heidi to Howard, but otherwise, everything else was essentially the same. And do you know, when the reports came back from both groups, both of the groups thought that, you know, Heidi and Howard were both successful. But Howard's group got rave reviews for how Howard conducted himself, whereas Heidi's group, you know, criticized her. Quite frankly, you know, they viewed Heidi as being kind of selfish and self-centered, and yet it was the same report. And Howard, they gave high fives to. So that, you know, when I first read that, and I believe that the first time I was aware of that was in Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but I just couldn't believe that, Victoria. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that as well.
No, I really do. And, you know, this is a perfect example, sadly, of, you know, of gender stereotyping and the gendered, you know, the judgmental gendered glasses, you know, that we all wear because we have been enculturated in a society which has a differential valuing of the essential feminine and the essential masculine. There is a quintessential study that was done by Broverman et al., and this is a classic study in the field of psychology, social psychology. It was done, I think, in 1972, I believe. This is a famous study where they took a look at, they asked subjects to select the attributes of a healthy man. They asked subjects to select the attributes of a healthy woman, and then they asked subjects to rate the attributes of a healthy person. There was a very high correlation between the attributes of a healthy man and a healthy person. There was a negative correlation between the attributes of a healthy woman and a healthy person.
Wow.
So to be a healthy woman is not to be a healthy person.
Yeah, and it's troubling on many levels. But it also, I think, correlates with another posture that when a man is successful, it seems that both genders like him. But when a woman is successful, both genders dislike her. You know, I have to throw out, there is a syndrome, I'll call it, which kind of fits this. It's called the queen bee syndrome. And it is just really as it sounds. You know, if you've studied bees, you know that, you know, the queen is the king of the nest, right? She, you know, she's the ruler, and if she doesn't like you, she'll make sure that you don't fly another day. But in business, the queen bee syndrome, it reflects a woman who's been elevated to a certain level in leadership, and isn't likely to help other women. In fact, she will go out of her way to make sure that other women don't succeed in very subtle and hideous ways. So, you know, very troubling.
Well, here's the deal. You have to look at the frame the picture's in. So the picture that Mary just drew for us is in a frame that's about, like, let's say 2 inch by 3 inch. If we pull the frame back and put this in a frame that's, say, 16 by 20 and take a look at the bigger picture, it is enmeshed. It is the, in the backdrop of this is the hundreds and thousands of years of gender enculturated stereotyping and dishonoring of the sacred feminine.
Yeah.
That's the 16 by 20. The 2 by 3 inch picture looks like Queen Bee, but there is a reason for this. Any disenfranchised group will turn upon itself in order to ingratiate themselves and gain power in the dominant group.
Yeah.
We see this
and that's,
across the board.
Yeah. And
we
that
see
is
this
that is
in
exactly.
every single minority group. We look at.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. So here are a couple of other things that Sandberg talks about, which I think are, I've experienced a couple of these. I won't go into detail on this show, but I'm reading these and kind of
protecting
laughing
the
because,
innocent. Yes.
Yeah, I've kind of experienced that. But the three that she really hits in the book that I think are so relevant are what she refers to as the likability bias. She talks about the performance and evaluation bias, and the third one, I believe, is performance attrition bias. So here's what they are briefly. You know, likability bias, this one, it just cracks me up. Again, it's right in alignment with what we've already talked about. When a woman asserts herself, she is seen in a very negative way as being aggressive and ambitious and kind of self-serving, but yet when a man asserts himself, he is seen as confident and strong. It's remarkable.
This is the Heidi Howard dilemma.
It is. It is. It's the Heidi Howard. So here's another one. And again, I can tell you that I see this in the workplace and I just scratch my head. The performance evaluation bias. You know, when this happens a lot too, when women and men are both vying for a promotional opportunity. Women are hired and promoted based on what they've already accomplished, while men are promoted and hired based on potential. That is not a level playing field. Women, it's all about what have you done, and men, it's about the potential of what you could do. That's just, it is just mind-boggling.
Well, again, I think it harkens back to the body of theory and expectancy theory and the research results. Women are not expected. They don't expect themselves. And they learn from the culture not to expect themselves to succeed.
Yeah,
there's something called this. There's something called the imposter syndrome, and it is a body of theory again that describes this tendency for women to feel like if they have achieved, they're a fake.
Yeah, yeah.
This is it goes back to Broverman et al. Again, the study that shows that a healthy, successful, whatever woman.
Yeah.
Does not correlate with person.
Well, you're
so
right. And
if you're a successful woman, you can't really be a woman, or if you're a woman, you can't be a success.
Right. And it relates to, before I get to the last one, the performance attrition, I just want to say this. There was a study done that actually Sandberg and her nonprofit, leanin.org, were part of with McKinsey. And they did some research with, I think it was like 30,000 employees in about 118 different companies. And they found out this very significant correlation. 74% of companies report that gender diversity is a top CEO priority, yet less than 50% of workers feel that their CEO has made it a priority. And then this is even worse. Women are less likely than men to see gender diversity as a priority for women. So, we again, just kind of to reiterate, we have kind of become our own worst enemy, and we're not even, again, promoting the fact that, hey, we're kind of left out of the boardroom. We're left out of leadership.
Let me make this comment because, this is a really important point. What we are looking at here is not a neutral field. It is a field that was created largely with masculinized concepts of competition, concepts of warrior, concepts of lack, concepts of who is the stronger, you know, who can conquest over whom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all about the masculinized.
Yeah, yeah.
Just recently,
absolutely.
Is there any talk of emotional intelligence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, cooperation, covenant, yeah, blah, blah. We had Tim Sanders on our February show, and those concepts are in there. Very, very
yeah.
recently. So
yeah.
we're looking here at a playing field that is extremely masculinized from the get-go. My question would really be, you know, are women truly, in their heart of hearts, interested? Because one of the things that Sheryl Sandberg said was it'll take 100 years for women to reach parity in the C-suite.
Right, that's
right. At the rate we're going. Well, do women really want to reach parity in the C-suite? Do they even want there to be a C-suite? Is the system even interesting in its structure, in its functioning, in how it, you know, quacks like a duck, looks like a duck? Are we interested in the same duck? I'm not sure.
And Victoria, I want to address that, and then I want to just make sure I get to the performance attrition bias here in just a minute. But mm-hmm. I can tell you from personal experience, part of the reason why women may not seem interested in reaching the level of the C-suite, or even a VP level for that matter, or senior executive VP level, is quite frankly because there aren't a lot of role models in front of them. So it's hard to imagine that, A, I could get there, and B, that I'd be happy there, because there aren't a lot of people that I can look to that have kind of carved that path in the woods that I can just follow in their footsteps. And that is a very real challenge. I see that. I experienced it. But I also see it in a lot of the companies that I work in. It's hard to get women to think about being leaders in their companies because they just don't see somebody that looks like them.
If we take this out to 16 by 20, I really wonder, it's like where, you know, when you're looking at the ball of string, how do you find where the string started?
Yeah.
The string started with how the company was founded, upon which principles the company was founded, what gendered energies founded the company, and actually in order to get the beginning of the string, you almost have to start your own company.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Even before that, you have to start your own company by throwing away your gendered glasses. Now, how is that even possible? But that
exactly.
is ideally where we'd have to start from in order to really look at this in pure form. But we're working with a system that's entrenched and ingrained, you know, it's ingrained the way that it is. And so Mary and I are looking at, okay, how do we work from where we are?
Yeah.
How
yeah.
do you lead from where you stand? How do you look at these things and make any humanizing, life-enhancing changes?
Yeah. And so here's one last curveball. You know, the performance attrition bias that I mentioned, women are given less credit for successful outcomes than men are. And they're blamed more for failures than men are. Men will typically attribute their success to their own skills or qualities, while women will attribute their success to getting lucky, working hard, or help from others. So there's, and we'll probably get into that more so in the next show, because that really does get into workplace challenges and team building of team and all of that.
But again, that is, again, exhibit one of the attributional research that was done 50 years ago, showing the writing on the wall, and all we've done is built more walls where the writing is prominent. And there it is in the latest research and Lean In, the Sheryl Sandberg's reporting, and the biases that are there. These biases are reflecting what we knew 50 years ago was going to come to be if we didn't really change some of the enculturated stereotypical, and you know, and Sheryl says in her book, cultural stereotypes are really under it all. So let me give you your home play, because we've got about 60 seconds before the show bails out here in live form, and you can always listen on archive. And this topic's really important. This is an awareness exercise that I want to give you all. Each morning, if you would intend to catch yourself, your thoughts, your words, your deeds, wearing your gender stereotype lenses, ask yourself, how am I seeing and reacting to my world based upon gender? Don't judge, please. Just notice. Notice how it is that you're looking at your world. I give you a very quick, I heard somebody on NPR the other day. She's a woman who talks and lectures on gender. She was in an airplane. They hit turbulence, and the first thought that came to her mind was, oh, my God, I hope there's a male flying this plane. This is somebody who teaches is very aware of these issues and yet reverted back to her enculturated, gendered lenses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it happens
amazing.
To us all, no judgment. Let's just take a look and see and if we can increase our awareness about how this operates in our world and how it might be influencing our world. Hey, signing off for this one. We just got into it. Isn't this exciting, Mary? We're going to do a whole other show on this in a couple of weeks. So
on the
24th, stay tuned, everybody.
We will be back. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
All right. Absolutely, everybody. Hey, have a great couple of weeks. We'll see you with more gender analysis here in our next show. Take care. See you, Mary. Bye, everybody.
Bye.